Christian greetings to each of you tonight in the name of Jesus. The last song that we sang was it's just a tremendous note of inspiration, I think, to introduce a subject of parenting and building personal conviction in our children. Now, you know, if mamas and daddies seek the things of the Lord first and seek the things that are above, I'm not sure that we need to say anything else. I think that if we, and I believe that if we would go home and just live that out in our everyday life, our children will catch a vision that develops conviction. And I know that's simplifying it very, very much, but let's continue to seek the things that are above. Building personal conviction in our children. Now, as we think about a subject like this, I struggled with this message somewhat. It would be nice this evening if there was a four-point formula to make this happen. When you think about how to build conviction, if you're a school teacher, some of you are school teachers, if you're a school teacher, how do you build conviction in your students? How do church leaders build conviction in their church members? How do you help those that you're guiding and leading to develop the ability to think through and to come up with their own conclusions and to make right conclusions? How do you help people to do that? I'm not sure that building conviction in our children is very much different than it is in any other area of life. And we'll look at that as we go along through this message. Just a couple thoughts in relation to children and raising our children. As I considered building conviction, I thought about families that I can think of. My growing up years, in the years as I've observed families and old enough now to see how the decisions that children made and where they are today. And the reality is that you have children that came from the same home, had the same parents, the same upbringing, the same cousins, the same church family, and the same school. And there's families with children that have made choices that took them to vastly different places. Why is that? Did the parents not do their part? Seems to me that parents need to receive some credit for children that turned out right. And they probably many times did much of the same things and taught their children the same things. And yet, one child makes one decision, another child makes another decision. You can ask the question after a while, does it really matter? Does it really matter? We'll look at that question a little later on. I'd also like to remind us this evening that in parenting, all of us are human, and if our children make right decisions and turn out right, it's in spite of our efforts, and it's in spite of our weaknesses. And we need to give God the glory for children that make choices that are right and choose to serve God and give their lives to Him and yield their hearts to Him. And it certainly is a blessing to parents when children choose the right path. Now, we know tonight that as parents, we have a foundation to set, to establish for children. And certainly the way we conduct our lives, the way we conduct our homes, either lends itself to making choices for godliness or lends itself for children to make choices toward the world. Building personal conviction in our children. Let's, first of all, I'd like us to turn to Genesis chapter 18. And this is a very, very familiar verse. Genesis 18 and verse 19. And this is a time when God came to Abraham. He came down. He wanted to talk to him about his plans to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And in verse 19, he says this. Well, maybe I should just back up to verse 17. Verse 16, and the men rose up from thence and looked toward Sodom, and Abram went with them to bring them on the way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. Then God said this about Abraham. He said, for I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. Now, there's something very precious about this verse and this setting, is because God was about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and God knew that Lot was there. And he came to Abraham to talk to him about this, and he says that, shall I hide from Abraham the thing which I do? You see, God knew Abraham in a personal way. God was a friend of Abraham, and Abraham was a friend of God. And God said, the Lord said, I'm going to have to talk to Abraham about this. They had a close relationship. Abraham was a man of worship. Abraham was a man of commitment to God. And I find this interesting, and as parents, we know that we're human, and we know that we often, our perspective isn't always so accurate, and our conclusions about life sometimes need some help and adjustment, and our own shortcomings in our own personal lives at times. We know we have those failures. We know we have those shortcomings. Back in verse 12 is where we have the account and these surrounding verses where the Lord in this setting told Abraham that Sarah was going to have a son, and she laughed. And just a few verses later, just a few moments later, God said, for I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. Now, I'm not in any way suggesting that God overlooks failure in our lives. But parents, this evening, let's take courage. Because as we have a desire, as we have a commitment to serve God, as we have a desire that our families would know God and would serve him, God hears and God knows our hearts. For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him. There's a couple things in this verse that I'd like to point out. One is that God had confidence in Abraham. How does God feel about us as fathers this evening? Does God look down on our households? Does God look down on our lives and say, for I know him? For I know him. Do we know God? Do we know the heart of God? Do we have a heart that's in tune with God and is communicating with God? For I know him, that he will command his children. It speaks of the fact that God had confidence that Abraham was concerned, and he was mindful of his responsibility as a father to direct and to guide. For he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of. And it was in this context of Abraham commanding his family in the ways of justice and judgment. It provided a place where God's will for Abraham could be accomplished. And as they moved forward, God was able to bless Abraham because of this confidence that he had in him. Building personal conviction in our children. What is conviction? I think that this word conviction is one of these words that has quite a broad use. And it's also one of these words that we maybe lift up to too high of a pedestal sometimes. Do you ever hear someone say, "Well, I'm of the conviction that," and supposedly using the word conviction is supposed to add a lot of foundation to his belief and to his theory and to his opinion. And we need to be men and women of conviction. But I believe sometimes we use this word to produce a lot of weight. I was impressed with the simple definition of the word conviction. In other words, the first definition is a formal declaration by the verdict of a jury or the decision of a judge. We understand that. Someone is convicted in court. That's not what we're talking about this evening. And secondly, this comes from the English Oxford Dictionary. Secondly is a firmly held belief or opinion. And thirdly, the quality of showing that one is firmly convinced of what one believes or says. And it's a very simple definition. It's nothing theological. It's just simply a conviction is a firmly held belief, or the dictionary says an opinion, which is kind of startling because sometimes when we think we have a conviction, it might just be an opinion. It might not be as solid and foundational as we think. And there are experiences that we face in life at times that test our beliefs. And we realize whether it's really a conviction that we're ready to stand on or it's just an opinion. And sometimes we can become very strong and dogmatic about issues and things that are probably only opinions and not really a very strong conviction. Just maybe trying to put this word conviction in my own words, we can maybe say it's a deep settled belief which serves as a guiding principle in our decision-making rationale. The word rationale simply means a set of reasons or a logical basis for a course of action or a particular belief. So it's a deep settled belief which serves as a guiding principle in our decision-making process. And I believe that that's what we're concerned about. That's what our interest is this evening. That our children would grow up and they would make these beliefs their own. And it would serve as a guiding principle throughout their lives. And so a conviction can be as simple and fickle as a six-year-old declaring that John Deere is the best and all other tractors are junk. At that particular moment in time, his opinion is that that's the way it is. And we know, most of us dads have had boys that have changed their opinion over time. A couple years later, it was one, and then after a while, it was another. And maybe some of that is just dependent on how strong dad's convictions are on that issue, if you can call that a conviction. It's just pretty something fairly simple and very, very fickle. It's neither here nor there. It doesn't matter. But a conviction may also be as strong as a belief that you will suffer for rather than relinquish your conviction and belief. It's quite a bit more than a simple opinion and isn't going to change. It's that which causes a man to submit to jail time rather than relinquishing his convictions on the Christian day school. Those kinds of things have happened, and men have stood and faced the consequences for not sending their children to public schools. They had a conviction, And it carried them through in a moment when a decision had to be made. And today we look back and we say they made the right decision. But what would we do in that test today? Do our convictions, do our beliefs, are they solid enough? Are they substantial enough to carry us through the very tough situations of life? I believe that we need to build conviction. We need to have conviction. And I believe that sometimes we can ask some questions that sort of undermine convictions. I remember years ago, I brought a message one Sunday morning on convictions. I'm not sure what the title was. But a brother challenged me after church. He said, you know, he thinks that a conviction is really only something that we're willing to die for. And he asked me, he said, so, and I don't know that I had even said anything about this in the sermon, but he asked me, he said, so, you know, you say you have a conviction for wearing the plain suit, but would you die for it? I don't know if I'd die for it or not. Probably not. Just that in and of itself. But you see that we can sort of water down convictions and beliefs. And so I believe that today there are things that we want to stand for, things that we believe are important, and things that we have convictions for that maybe we wouldn't necessarily die for them, but they serve as guiding principles in our life. And we'll look at this later on, but also as we think about convictions, it also has to do with our ability to stand and not easily be moved. Another question that I'd like to just look at briefly is, the title says, Building Personal Conviction in Our Children. Is there anything like a conviction that's not personal? I thought about that, and it'd be interesting to know of those of you that put this title together, if there was a reason why you included the word personal. And my first reaction was, my first feeling was that, well, that word, it doesn't add anything to the title, because there is no other type of conviction. The beliefs that you have, the convictions that you have are your own. Someone else's convictions, they have a good influence on you, but they don't do much for you personally. But as I thought about this idea, in other words, our children are born into our homes. We love them. We care for them. Our hearts bond together with their hearts. We train them and we teach them. And we teach them the convictions and the things that are meaningful to us. We do that subconsciously. We do that in areas of life that are non-moral issues. I referred to the make of a tractor, and we use that illustration so often. But invariably, a young boy will... Invariably, some point in time in his life, he is sure that the tractor that his dad likes is the best tractor there is. And sometimes that changes as time goes along. But there's things like that we want our children, and then when we come to the important issues of life, we want our children to take the teaching that we gave, to take the burdens of our hearts and the visions that we have, and we want them to make it their own. We want them to take that teaching and take the principles of Scripture and make it their own. And so in that regard, we want to build personal conviction. We want to help our children to have personal conviction. I thought about how different it is for individuals in the world. Just think about someone you know, maybe a neighbor. But someone that doesn't go to church, someone that doesn't seem to really have a lot of concern about moral issues even, how do they raise their children? Do they have any kind of vision whatsoever for their family and for their children? But we want our children to imbibe teaching, the doctrines of Scripture. We want them to understand faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. We want them to grow up to be men and women of integrity, and those who are being a light to the world and a light in the darkness. And so we want them to have their own personal conviction as they grow up in life. Also, in relation to the title, it says, Building Personal Conviction in Our Children. And I wondered, who is assuming the responsibility of our children? It doesn't say parents building the conviction. I thought that was interesting. And building personal conviction in our children. I think it's understood this evening that we're talking specifically to parents. But as parents, as we develop conviction, and as our children form their ideals and form their concepts of life, we as parents depend on the community to a large degree. We have Sunday school, we have the Christian day school, and there are a lot of influences that sometimes in those influences we need to curb some of that as parents. But to a large degree we benefit tremendously by the community of teaching that our children receive. And so as we think about building personal conviction in our children, it's not just us as fathers and mothers that are building that conviction, but it's so many other influences that are the simple fact of taking our families to a godly church and a Bible-believing church where there's other Christian parents and there's other children that are taught to listen, taught to love the things that are right. It's a tremendous influence. And so we need to remember that aspect as well. And building, the word building denotes a plan, a vision, goals, and an end product. It's a work in progress. And I believe this evening that as we think about developing convictions and building convictions, the fact of the matter is that I'm still building my own convictions. I don't know if Roy's past that stage or not, but you know, it's a work in progress. It's not that our convictions necessarily change, but my understanding of Scripture and my understanding of Bible doctrine and my understanding of how to better serve the Lord is a continual progress, and it's a continual work. And so this is a progress. This is a work that goes on. And so parents, after your children are married, you still have a responsibility to continue to help build conviction in your children. As grandparents, you want to build conviction. You want to lend your support and influence in building conviction in your grandchildren. And so it's a work of progress. Another question that I'd like to just look at is, are convictions important? Does it really matter if our children develop convictions or not? Does it really matter? What is it that we, why is it that we want our children to have convictions? How important are they? If convictions are unimportant or they're optional, then we may as well just go home because it doesn't matter. And I think it's good for us to think about, it's good for me to think about this question as a parent, because you know, you really get into the humdrum of everyday life, and one day leads to another, and you know, we have our jobs and we have our responsibilities, and there's children to take to school, and there's washing to do, and there's meals to make, and there's a job to do, and there's a sermon to get ready, and you know, one week goes into the next week, and we kind of do the same things over and over and over again. What is it that we're endeavoring to accomplish with our children? You see, in life, we have the natural aspect of life. God designed family life. And all across the world, families are happening to a certain degree. And there's this life cycle that just kind of continues. It's a natural cycle. But as godly fathers and mothers, what is our goal? What is our motive? What is our calling? Is it simply to carry on this propagation of the human race? It is that, but it's more than that. God is looking for individuals that he can have a relationship with. And he's looking to parents to raise up their children in a way that they can find that relationship with him. We'll look at that a little more later on. And so convictions are important. Do you as a parent have convictions? Do you as a youth have convictions? It seems sometimes that some parents sort of float along on the acceptable norms in the community and the church and depend on the school teacher and the church leader's convictions to bring any sense of definitive direction to their family. And I'm sure that I have been guilty of that already, where we just depend on the good influences to carry through and to overcome a problem in our home. But some parents seemingly float along on the acceptable norms in the community and church and depend on the school teacher and the church leader's convictions to bring any sense of definitive direction to their family. And children grow up without a lot of direction, without a lot of guidance. And sometimes children choose what's right, and sometimes they just drift into the world and into carnal living. And so this evening, I believe that we all understand and we all agree that there is value in conviction. And we need to give attention to this process of building conviction. I'd like to look now at just a number of thoughts in relation to how we as parents can develop conviction in our children. And I said in the outstart that it would be nice if there was just a four-step formula, but it isn't that way. And really, the real essence of this subject finally lies in the ability that we have as parents to live godly lives and be role models for our children. It's really where our children learn the concepts and see the principles of godliness worked out in their lives, and we'll look at that as we go along. But as parents, we need to take the role in commanding our children after us. And I was impressed with that here with Abraham. He commanded his children. His family knew his heart. His children understood the commitment he had to Jehovah God, the God of heaven. His family understood his worship. They understood his desire to serve God and to please him with all his heart. He was a friend of God, and God said, "I know him." And so as parents, we need to take our role in commanding our children after us. And I'll simply say this, that establishing a law and order in our homes and expecting obedience from our children is not something that happens easily. Sometimes as parents, sometimes as fathers, you know, something happens and we immediately try to figure out an excuse for our child. Or maybe they didn't understand, or you know, they probably didn't hear us, or they didn't understand our command that we gave. But we need to command our children. We need to expect obedience. We need to teach, and we need to show them the right way. We need to be in charge of our homes. Along with that, we need to teach our children to be submissive and to yield their will to the will of their parents. And I just like to think a little bit about our children come into our homes. They are helpless. They have open hearts, as it were. They are totally dependent on us as parents. And they're born into our homes with completely depending on us for everything that they do, or everything that they need, I should say. And it doesn't take long for that little baby to express its will. It just happens at such a young age. And it takes a lot of wisdom for parents to understand the will of a small baby. And the sooner that you can just take that small child, that small baby, when it expresses and exerts itself, and just simply, you know, hold it tight and help them to understand that there's a parent that they're going to have to yield their will to. Of course, this is all done in love and with a loving heart. But, you know, the sooner that child, that small child understands that, it makes life so much easier. And it sets the stage for those little steps for teaching a child to yield their will to that of their parents. And as a child is able to understand your direction, they need to learn to respond to the direction that you give. In other words, a child is not very old till it understands the word no. And it understands that when a parent says no, it means that whatever they're doing, they need to pay attention to, and they need to think about. They need to respond accordingly. But when a child learns that no doesn't necessarily mean no, they'll learn that they can just challenge everything that comes along, every direction that they're given. And they go through life that way, and they come to school, and they do the same thing to the school teacher. They just challenge. See where the limit is. See where the breaking point is. And you've probably observed this already, but in children this summer, my wife was teaching summer Bible school at Swatara, and we had a lot of town children. It was, I don't know, they had three teachers, I think, in the class, and their hands were pretty full some evenings. But she talked about this one child that we knew had a little trouble listening on its parents. And in that environment, where the teachers just simply established where the lines were, that child found rest. And I'm not even saying that critically of the parents. I'm just simply saying that it's a reality that as parents, we need to remind ourselves of that at times, that our children want security, and they look to us for leadership. They look to us for drawing lines. And when we draw those boundaries, it brings security to their hearts and to their lives. A story I came across some time ago that has often impressed me in relation to drawing lines for our children is the story that was told of a Chicago, Illinois elementary school. Back in the day, there was an elementary school on a busy street corner. It was back in the day when there weren't fences around the schools, the playgrounds. And these children would play out at this busy street. And as the years went along, the street became busier and busier, and the trucks got larger, and they were noisier, and they drove faster. And one day, the school board and the school officials realized that, you know, at recess time, the children would all stay up against the building. They didn't want to get down close to the road, and there was a fairly large area of the playground that the children just didn't feel comfortable going to. And so they decided that, you know what, we better just put a fence around this lot. And they put the fence up, and the children would go out to play, and they were relaxed. They would play right up to the fence. The fence was there, and it was a safety. It was a security. They knew where the line was. The danger was on the other side of the fence. And they had the freedom. They had a lot more freedom in their life. And so as parents, we need to draw those lines and make those lines, and we need to expect obedience from our children. And it brings so much rest and so much freedom to our children. I remember when I was a boy growing up, this actually was a story that I heard someone say about another boy that was pretty close to my age. And I didn't know a lot about his family. It was in one of the other churches in our district. But one of the men in the congregation had been at the place of business. This family had a business, and he was there one day, and he saw the 13-year-old boy come into the office, And his dad told him to go do something. He was with one of his cousins or one of his brothers. And he told him to go do a job. And this boy just acted like he didn't even hear his dad say anything. And he went completely the other direction and did something altogether different than his dad told him to, what his dad told him to do. And I remember hearing some dads talk about this. And at that time, I wasn't able to grasp the reality of what they were concerned about. But this brother in the church later on went to this father and shared this concern. He shared what happened that day there in his office. And he said, you know, I'm just concerned that your son he just deliberately turned around and did exactly the opposite of what you asked him to do and told him to do. And the dad said, well, I don't even remember what you're talking about. And this brother's conclusion was that apparently was a normal thing in that home. He said, if my son would have just blatantly disobeyed me like that son did that day, he said, I certainly would have remembered it. He said, we'd have had a talk. He said, there would have been some consequences. But it was very obvious in this father's mind that, yeah, it just happened. And so that child was never taught to yield and to submit to the will of his father. He had learned to do his own thing and be able to get away with it. And I'll just say that as I look back today upon that family, many of those children grew up, left the church, went out into worldliness, and had to make a lot of their own decisions. And some of the children made choices that and made something of themselves, but many of them, some of the other children, didn't turn out very well at all. We need to help our children to learn to be obedient. There's something I like to notice in Deuteronomy 31, and I saw this in our Sunday school lesson this morning. And it's a principle that we have in the scriptures. It's a principle that we as God's people must relate to God this way. And in Deuteronomy 31 and verse 12, in other words, Moses was to gather all the people together in verse 11. Before the Lord thy God in the place which he shall choose, thou shalt read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Gather the people together, men and women and children, and thy stranger that is within thy gates. Notice this. So he was to gather the people together, and he was to share the law, to read the law, that they may hear. And so the people needed to hear, they needed to listen to the law, that they may learn. And fear the Lord your God, and observe to do all the words of this law. And so you have the steps that really apply to us as parents as we relate to our children and as we teach and train them. We need to gather them together. We need to teach them. They need to hear us. They need to listen to us. They need to, so that they may learn and so that they would fear the Lord. In other words, in all of our teaching, whether it's as parents, whether it's as church leaders, whether it's as a Sunday school teacher, the ultimate goal is that we want our people to fear the Lord. We want them to honor the Lord and to worship Him and to fear Him and to serve Him and to observe to do all the words of this law. And so that comes as we teach our children and as we guide them in the ways of holiness. As parents, we need to be role models to our children. And I'm not sure that there's any other way to build conviction than that right there. And I'd just like to challenge us as fathers and mothers this evening, challenging myself. Am I a role model? Do I really want my children to really follow in my footsteps? Do I? Somehow as fathers and mothers, I think that we sort of have this misconception sometimes that our children don't really pick up on our shortcomings. And they do. They really do. We must be role models. We largely build conviction through consistent expectations of practice. And as we live these out in our life, and as we defend the truth of the gospel, and as we defend the principles that are important to us. In Jeremiah chapter 35, we have this little account of the Rechabites. And I'm often impressed with with this. God used the Rechabites as an object lesson for the children of Israel. And in Jeremiah 35 and verse 1, "And the word which came unto Jeremiah from the Lord in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, saying, Go unto the house of the Rechabites, and speak unto them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink." Now this was God commanding Jeremiah to go to the house of the Rechabites, and set them down, and bring them wine to drink. "Then I took Jaazaniah, the son of Jeremiah, the son of Habazaniah, and his brethren and all his sons, and the whole house of the Rechabites, and I brought them into the house of the Lord, into the chamber of the sons of Hanan, the son of Igdala, a man of God, which was by the chamber of the princes, which was above the chamber of Maaseiah, the son of Shalem, the keeper of the door. And I set before the sons of the house of the Rechabites pots full of wine and cups, and I said unto them, Drink ye wine." Now, you got the setting, okay? This is God telling Jeremiah to do this, and he brought them into the house of God. Now, you would think that these Rechabites, these sons of Rechab, somehow would have decided that it must be all right to drink this wine. "And I set before the sons of the Rechabites pots full of wine and cups, and I said unto them, Drink ye wine. But they said, We will not drink. We will drink no wine, for Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, Ye shall drink no wine, neither ye nor your sons forever. Neither shall ye build house, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyards, nor have any, but all your days shall ye dwell in tents, that ye may live many days in the land where ye be strangers." And God used that happening. God used this object lesson to teach a lesson to the children of Israel. And it teaches us a principle that God expects parents to teach, to promote truth, and he expects that children will follow in those footsteps. And it's a tremendous challenge and a tremendous lesson for us today. We need to be role models. We need to live that out. We need to pass our convictions along to our children. We also need to help our children have a proper fear of God. And in the life of Joseph, you don't need to turn there. I'm not going to read many verses there, but in Genesis chapter 39, and this was after Joseph was down in Egypt. Joseph was a young man when he went to Egypt. He was 17 years old. And we know the story about his experience in Potiphar's house. But you think about the life of Joseph and his ability to work through the situation with his brothers and to experience the persecution and the unkind treatment that he received there. And as he went through that experience, as he traveled the whole way down to Egypt, he comes to that experience with Potiphar's wife. And when she tempted him, she allured him. He said, "There's none greater in this house than I, nor hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And I believe that right there is encapsulated the key and the secret to Joseph's success in all of his life. It was that which carried him through the tests and carried him through the dark times in his life. His experience in prison and his experience in Egypt as he later on was brought back out of prison again, and as he worked and moved among the Egyptians, and as he provided there a place for even his family to come to later on. But we need to help our children have a proper fear of God. Help them to understand God's presence. We do that even at a young age, when in the simple thing, like when there's a thunderstorm, and you help your child to understand that, you know, God is here. God is with us. God is watching over us. And, you know, I remember as a child, I didn't like thunderstorms at all. In fact, today yet, I don't. When there's a fierce thunderstorm, I'm not sitting out on the porch just calmly taking everything in. But I remember the day when one of my parents told me that God is here. God will take care of us. But there's still something about that that didn't quite answer the question, because I knew that there were houses that burned down sometimes because of electrical storms. But as we help our children to understand that God is here, God is watching over us, He's sovereign, and He'll take us through, He'll carry us through. We don't explain all that to our children, but as we get older, and as we learn, children learn to trust God. And it comes to the areas where young people are seeking God's will for their life, and we help them to understand the importance of moving ahead at the leading of God and allowing God to guide and direct their life, having a proper fear of God. As parents, we also need to build conviction which supports the goals that you have for your family. And I think sometimes that in our family, you know, my wife and I got married and we had children, and I was ordained at a fairly young age. And I look back and look at some families that are singing families, and some families that very obviously had a mission vision that they communicated to their children. And I believe that it's good for young families to have some goals like that. What is it that you want from your children? Do you want them just to be loggers, or do you want them? Are you satisfied if they just do a good job at laying pavers or selling equipment? Or what are the goals and what are the visions you have for your children? Does it go beyond our own selves and our own occupations? And so as we have those visions, we're going to need to teach. We're going to need to place our children among the influence that supports and encourages the vision that we have. If you have a mission vision for your family, one of the ways to communicate that to your children is to take your vacation and go visit a mission field. You'll communicate the burden of your heart to your children. They'll catch that vision. We need to move ahead with those things that support the goal that we have for our families. As parents, we need to be steady and consistent as we relate to our children. And I believe that this applies to more than just biblical issues and moral issues, but in all of life. Children respect parents who are steady and who are consistent with their job, with the ideas that they have. And children need to learn to trust their parents. And as they do that, they are able to pass on their beliefs and their convictions. And last of all, I'd just like to look at two verses. I'd like to think a little bit about our relationships that we have with our children. Someone said recently in my hearing that, and he wasn't talking about raising children, but he was talking about the fact that it seems sometimes like all people can do anymore is promote relationships. And he was somewhat comparing, he was comparing that to teaching and promoting Bible doctrine, and how that we need to get beyond beyond relationships. But I want us to think about another aspect. In Ephesians chapter 6, it's a very familiar verse that talks about fathers. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. And this verse very clearly teaches that there's a connection between the two. There's a connection between fathers and the relationship they have with their children. Fathers that express anger and wrath to their children are going to have a difficult time nurturing them and bringing them up in the admonition of the Lord. And so in order for us to be able to teach and communicate that truth to our children, we need to have a relationship with them that provides an environment that they're ready to accept what we have to say. And then over in Malachi, I was impressed with this again recently. In Malachi chapter 4, as God was closing the Old Testament, and just ahead of the 400 silent years between the Testaments, and as he was, the next greatest event was the Lord Jesus coming. He says, "And behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord. And he shall turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." And so as parents today, let's be reminded that we must have good relationships in our homes. In an environment of a lot of tension, a lot of arguing, a lot of mistrust in each other, is an environment that truth isn't conveyed, and it isn't passed along. Children don't receive the truth that we endeavor to teach, and so we must be mindful of the fact that our homes need to be havens of rest from this world of chaos. Our homes need to be havens of security where truth can be expressed and truth can be conveyed to our children. I believe also that as fathers and mothers, but especially fathers, our children are looking to us as fathers to be leaders, men where they can find trust and confidence in. And across the Mennonite church, there's a lot of fathers that have turned children away from the truth. And many children today are experiencing heartache and pain of the memories they have of their childhood years. And, every child needs to make its own decision and choice. But as fathers and mothers, let's have homes, let's live lives, let's be men and women of integrity. Let's spend time with our children so that we can have an environment where truth can be conveyed to our children. And as we do that, and as they see that lived out in our lives, it's a place where conviction will settle into their hearts and lives. It'll become a part of their life, and they'll pattern their own life after our example. May God help each of us to be fathers and mothers that God can bless.